Okay, today is January 23rd, and we are learning Chamesh Megillos, and we're starting with Koheles, and we will be touching upon all five. We'll be doing afterwards Eicha, and then we'll be strategically moving the other three, so that we'll be doing Esther around Purim time, Shir Shirim around Pesach time, and Rus, we have a very early Shavuos. Rus will be in close to Shavuos time, Mamash. So it'll be round final. So we'll be measuring it that way. Okay, the idea of putting these five books together as a unit for a course called Five Megillot does not appear to be from the Talmud. There's no unit called Chamesh Megillot in the Talmud. Only one of these is called the Megillah in the Talmud, and it gets its own Masechta. Of course, that would be Esther, Masechta's Megillah. When the Gemara in Bava Basra, Daf Yudal Adam Beis, lists the 24 books of Tanakh, just for your purposes, it's going to be the next class and intro, and when the Gemara in Bava Basra lists the 24 books, it lists them in an order unrecognizable to us in this work. Right? Here the order is just very simple. You have Chamisha Chumshe Torah, the four Nevi'im Rishonim, the four Nevi'im Achronim. Right? Our order then has, look how we do this, Emes, five Megillot, and then Daniel, Ezra, Nehemiah, and Divrei Hayamim. Okay, that's going to be 24. 10, 18, 21, 22, 23, 24. MS stands for three books that begin with the word MS, but it's actually backwards. So Tehillim, Mishlei, and Iyov. The reason why they're called Sifrei Emes is because there's very little storyline in these three books. They're just about the truth of the human condition, suffering, human experiences, etc., etc. Okay, so those are called. That's how Ksuba begins. And then you have the five Megillot in the order in which they are read, starting from Pesach. Right. So that would be Shir HaShirim, followed by Rus, followed by Eicha, followed by Koheles, followed by Esther. Right? Get it? Pesach, Shavuos, Tisha B'Av, Sukkot, Purim. Right? So that's how our Tanakh lists this. And then Daniel is Mechemi Divrei Yamim. But that's not how the Gemara lists it. The Gemara does not know from that word. Okay? The Gemara lists the books of Ksuvim in chronological order. So the books of the Chamesh Megillos are all over the place. Right? Based on this, look at the five. Which one should come first? Rus. Okay, so Rus comes before all those others. Esther is all the way at the end. Right? So the Gemara just lists them in their time. They don't know from something called Chamesh Megillot. Obviously, what puts these five together as a group has to do with liturgy. It's liturgical use as being read in shul on certain days. So, yes, these five are read publicly. Almost all shuls have the custom now, where you daven, right? They read Rusim and Shavuos. Almost all shuls, some read with a klaf. One of the Gaon's minhag is to read it with a bracha even. All five, not just Megillas Esther. And I seem to recall that your father also was a Bal Kore, right?
And I'm the Rus Bal Kore from my show for the last 5 years.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we did the
bracha from
Pav. Nice, okay. All right, so that's a Vilna Gaon's minhag. And so the Rus has is the only book of the Tanakh that has both, as a kri uksiv, a ksiv velo kri, and a kri velo ksiv. So it's a nice, no other book of Tanakh has such a thing. So that's just as a minor point. 1,000 years ago, no one would be giving a course like this.
what puts these five books together, right?
Plus the earliest reference to reading, say, Shir HaShirim on Pesach or Rus on Shavuos, it's not in the Gemara, right? Eicha on Tisha B'Av, it does appear to be obvious, right? But what obviously connects Rus to Shavuos? I mean, no, the Midrashim say, I mean, when the rabbi introduces Rus, he'll say, while we're reading this today. But it's not jumping out at you like Megillas Esther and Purim, right? In the list of the Gemara's 24 books, it lists Esther as Megillat Esther. But the other four just says, well, that was it. Just full disclosure, Eicha is not called Eicha in Chazal. It's called Kinot in Chazal. Right? What's the basis of those two names is what became very popular around the time of Rashi is to call books by their first basic word, first major word. Second book of the Torah is called Shmos, or Ve'ila Shmos. Chazal's approach to books of the Tanakh is to call them by their content. Okay? So Eicha becomes Kinot. It's interesting, if you buy an Eicha in a store and it's translated, the front page will probably read either Lamentations, which is Kinot, right? Or possibly E-I-C-H-A, right? But one thing you will certainly not ever see on a book of Eicha by itself is how, with a question. Right? So in the Rishonim, they started doing this. Look, Rashi refers to the fourth book of the Torah quite often in his writings as Sefer Vayidaber. The third book is Vayikra, the fourth book is Vayidaber. The word Bamidbar doesn't appear until a few words into the Parsha. Right? Even some of the Parsha names we give isn't even the word that appears in the text. Like it's Hamishpatim, it's Hamatos. Those Torahs, Hamatzorah, we call it Mitzvah, you know. All right, I'm just saying that it became popular to use this first word kind of thing. So, what about Koheles then? The book is about Koheles? What is Koheles? Koheles is a name. All right, it's the author, but it also has to do with Kehila. It says in Malachim Aleph, Vayakhel Shlomo Esa'om. So these were things, he would teach them wisdom, but Kehila. So Koheles means wisdom taught by Kehila. Alright, fair enough. Okay, one other programmatic point, which actually does again come up in the intro class, is all five of these Megillot are obviously in Ksuvim. What does that mean about their content? Is it something different than if they were in Nevi'im? So just very quickly, Radak says the difference is that Nevi'im is Nevuah, Ksuvim is Ruach HaKodesh. Nevi'im is Ko Amar Hashem, that this is what's going to happen. Ksuvim is Ruach HaKodesh. But, I mean, so what's the difference? They're both divinely inspired. Yeah, but Nevuah is very different than Ruach HaKodesh. Nevuah is a specific message that you're getting precisely from a divine source that you have to maybe now interpret and give over to the people properly, as opposed, and when you get that message, you have no senses. The message is in a very deep sleep. You can't be walking while getting a nevuah unless you're Moshe. According to the Rambam, no human being ever got a nevuah that was sense, pure sense data. You're actually sensing things you can touch, feel, see, smell, right? Now, the brain is very powerful. You can have a dream of eating sour food and actually, you know, cringe in your sleep. You can have a dream of touching the radiator cap on your car and actually, right? Rambam says that Yaakov didn't fight an angel because an angel can't be perceived. Yaakov had a dream of fighting with an angel, and in his sleep, twisted his sayer.
or dislocating his hip or thigh bone or something like that. So, Ruach HaKodesh, however, may be a state that maybe Mozart was in when he wrote some of his finest pieces. Right? Okay. Ruach HaKodesh is something that is you can be in your senses when you have it, but it's certainly low. Okay, that's the redox difference between the Vim and Ksuvim. Maybe you can feel it. Like Koheles, Mishle, it's not the level of Yeshayahu version, right? The Meiri disagrees with this. If you look at the list, one of the books towards the end, is really some of the most far-reaching nevuah in Tanakh. Very little of Tanakh comes close to the nevuah of the person I just circled, Donita. That is really very, it's esoteric, I'll admit. It seems that Daniel himself didn't quite get all of it, like Zachariah, who wrote some of the texts of the Kabbalah. But it's certainly the Bua, right? So the Meiri, Nachum HaMeiri, have you heard of it? The Meiri, living a little bit after the Radak, has a different cheshbon of the difference between the Vim and the Ksuvim. He says, no, you can be a perfect Navi in the Ksuvim. Moshe wrote Iyov, which is the Ksuvim. That means Moshe was on a lower level when he wrote Ksuvim. Right? No. Nevi'im means Niv. You got this prophecy to give over in speech and in writing. Ksuvim is where you get a prophecy to give over. Finish my sentence.
Just
in writing. Only in writing, but not in speech. There's no Ko Amar Hashem in all of Ksuvim. There's no Ne'um Hashem in all of Ksuvim. Get it? Okay. In fairness to the Radak, he bases his difference on the Gemara in the beginning of Maseches Megillah. Maybe you're familiar with it. Where the Gemara talks about Daniel walking with three friends. That's a story in Sefer Daniel. Although they're not named in Daniel, they are named in the Talmud. He said, the Gemara says they're Chagai, Zechariah, Malachi. This appears at the end of Sanhedrin and Daf Gimel in Maseches Megillah. So Chagai, Zechariah, Malachi are walking with Daniel, and Daniel sees a very terrible sight, a sight that inspires tremendous fear. And he asks the three friends, do you see that? And they say, no, we don't see it. But they felt the fear, they felt the presence of something, and they ran away. He stood his ground, looked at it, deciphered it, described it, and he gives a prophecy about it. That's in Daniel. Just not who those three people are. The Gemara has Daniel responding to what just happened, and he says, they're greater than I am, and I'm greater than they are. They're greater than I am because they're Nevi'im and I'm not. I'm greater than they are because I saw the prophecy and they didn't. Right? So how does the Radak explain what he's saying? They're Nevi'im. I'm just Ruach HaKodesh. But that leaves you with a bad taste in your mouth. If they're Nevi'im and I'm Ruach HaKodesh, why did I get to perceive it and they didn't? Right? The Meiri says, no. Of course Daniel's a Navi. He's just a Navi that's not as great as those because they were given the what to say over two ways. To give over in two ways. With words, Niv, Nevuah, and in writing. Because everyone writes the Nevuah. As opposed to me, where my Nevuah was only to be given over in writing. Look, the last pasuk in Daniel, Hashem tells him, write this down, don't share it with anybody. Leave it for a later generation to see. He's not supposed to give it over in words. Right? So that's the Meiri's explanation of the difference between Vim and Ksuvim. And now let's apply this to, forget about Moshe right now, who writes in Ksuvim, apply it to Yirmiyahu and Shmuel. What do these two Nevi'im have in common? Yirmiyahu and Shmuel, when it comes to this discussion. These are the only two Nevi'im who have books in both Nevi'im and Ksuvim. Shmuel wrote Rus according to the Gemara, and he wrote Shoftim and Shmuel. There's three books, two in Nevi'im, one in Ksuvim. Yirmiyahu wrote Malachim and Yirmiyahu and Eicha. What the Gemara calls Kinos. So according to the Radak, how would you explain why Yirmiyahu and Shmuel have books in both? Just apply it.
One was in Nevi'im, it was in Nevi'ah.
Right. When Shmuel wrote Rus, he was not on the level of Nevuah. Ruach HaKodesh, look at the book, it's not, no great Nevuah involved. He knew David was, because that's the reason for him writing the book. Right? To justify David's position as possibly as the next king. Whereby no one should doubt his lineage, because that was raised already once. Right? And the same could be Yirmiyahu. When Yirmiyahu wrote Yirmiyahu and Malachim, he was on the level of Nebuah. When he wrote Eicha, he was not on the level of Nebuah. He couldn't rise to that level. Meiri, I think, has a simpler explanation. Meiri says, very simple, Rus and Eicha were not prophetic books to be said over. They were prophetic books to be written down for future generations to read. It's eminently clear about Rus, but it's also clear about Eicha. Okay? It's good enough. Okay. So let's now talk about, start with Koheles. This is a book about wisdom. Right? And while what I'm about to tell you is true about Esther as well as Koheles, where, remember, we started before talking about these five books that had the canonicity question. Koheles and Esther are two of them. The other three being Mishlei, Shir HaShirim, and Yechezkel. Right, but I'm only going to discuss Koheles' problem. Okay? The Gemara has a number of places, and it's actually in Mishnayos also. Your main sources are Maseches Yudayim, Maseches Eduyot, Maseches Megillah. These are Mishnayos. Your main source in the Talmud will be Maseches Shabbos, Daf Lamed Aleph, and Maseches Megillah. Right? For Esther. Daf Zayin. Now, there's also something called Maseches Sofrim. I'm not going to get involved into what the status of Maseches Sofrim is. Have you ever heard of it?
Heard of it.
You find it at the end of Maseches Avodah Zarah. Together with a number of other Maseches. These little Maseches are called Maseches Katanos. The status of these Maseches seems to be a Machlokas Rishonim. Whether it has the force and the authority of the Talmud. Okay. It seems that Tosfos in a number of places in Shas, seems to feel that the Sefer Sofrim has the force of a Mishnah. It has the authority as though it's a Mishnah. The Rosh, and hence the Tur, the Rosh and the Tur seem to disagree. If it's in the Sefer Sofer, but not in the Talmud, that doesn't mean it's not the Talmud. It's in the Talmud, okay. The Talmud wrote something, the Sefer Sofer copied it, fine. It's no less authority. But if it's in the Sefer Sofer, but it's not in the Talmud, I'm not considering it. Okay? If you want an example, it appears in a few number of places. The most famous example is the Machlokas Tosfos and the Rosh over whether you have to repeat your Shema Esrei if you forgot the additions of Aser Sinai Tshuva. Not Melech HaKadosh right now, that's a Gemara and Brachos that we debate. I'm talking about Yitzchok V'Chaim Tovim, Sefer Chaim, Zochrein V'Chaim, Chamot, I'm talking about, right? So Tosfos Paskins that if you forget any of those four, even the last four, you've got to say the whole Shema Esrei. The Rosh Paskins that you don't, and he gives a reason. He says, because it's not found, these four are not found in the Talmud.
And he's correct. But the author is the Sofer. This episode is all about liturgies, how we daven, what's part of Tanakh, Kriyuk Siv. It tells you all kinds of things about that then we get to our first place, of course. But the Sefer Sofrim will also discuss which books are part of Tanakh and which books are not. So I just want to use it as a source, okay? Mishnayos, Sefer Yadayim, Ediyot, Megillah, the Gemara, Sefer Shabbos, Sefer Megillah. There's also a very important Gemara, Sefer Menachos, so that's the Chesiyot, but that's for another time. And the Sefer Sofrim. Okay? So in all of these sources, Koheles is rejected by somebody. Sometimes more than somebody. Sometimes a whole school. Beis Shammah says Koheles is not part of the Tanakh. Shimon ben Manasseh says Koheles is not part of the Tanakh. That last one is significant because Shimon ben Manasseh is a prolific author of Drosha in Koheles Rabbah. He doesn't think it's part of Tanakh, but he thought that there's wisdom in it, and you can quote it. That's what we talked about canonization earlier today. Okay. I just want to tell you one of these sources. It's obvious that Megillah would be interested in Hillel Esther and tangentially the Koheles. Ediot is a collection of testimonies. So, okay, you give testimony. Beis Shammah gives testimony that Koheles is not part of Tanakh. Mesechus Yadayim is the key to explaining this, and you'll have a hand up on the students in the other class on this. What is it? Mesechus Yadayim talks about the not biblical but rabbinic idea that from here down can become more tame than here up. Because you know, you're all one piece according to the Torah, and if this is tame, your knee is tame, your finger is tame. And if your finger is tame, your toe is tame. Right? But Sefer Yadayim is based on what you may have heard in Halacha, since Yadayim Askanios hand, the hands touch things, so we're going to go there a higher level of Truma, which means that we'll make more things Tame, like Truma, things like that, right? We'll make Xeros on the hands to be more Tame than the rest of your body. Okay? That's the thesis of this work. In the Sefer Yadayim, which also touches upon a Gemara in Masechta Shabbos, not Lalef, but Daf Yud Gimel, which is also touches upon this. It says that a Tanakh makes the hands tummy to the second degree. It's not debilitating. Second degree doesn't make cholim tummy, so you can study Tanakh and eat your cholim. But second degree Truma does metame Truma and Kal Chomer Kachshon. Right? So don't open the Tanakh while you're reading Truma, because it will make it tummy. Why? So the Gemara in Shabbos, the Mishnah in the Yadayim says things very, very succinctly. The Gemara's job is to explain why, not immediately, why not my time? Why does a Tanakh make your hands tummy? Right? The answer is because people used to store their holy books with their truma. If you're a Kohen, all your food is probably truma. If you're Israel, you separate from your granary, you take it ready for to give to a Kohen, and now whatever else you have is now chulin because you properly separated. What are you doing with it? If you're able to give it right to a Kohen who comes up to the granary, fine. But the Gemara said Kohanim should not do that, because it means you're trying to get an unfair advantage over other Kohanim. Maybe you've heard that? Man, don't go up to, you know, to say, here, give it to me. Let him decide himself who to give it to. It's probably more convenient for him to give it to him. He doesn't have to now store it in his house, right? But if he is storing it in his house, he wants to store it in a holy place in the house. He doesn't want it to become tummy. So what does he do? He says, High Kodesh, the High Kodesh, my Truma. And he stores it in the same cupboard. They didn't have big storage places. You see some of the households of the time of the Talmud, these were tiny little holes and caves and holes in the wall. Where did you store your food? Where did you store your books? Not that they had so many, but they had special places where they would put the tefillin and the talis and put their some holy things. And what would happen? Where you stored food was always given to
stealing from animals, for instance. Kibun de kochozi de koi de oil day have saved. When they saw that animals would nibble away at food, and if they saw a book there, a goat might nibble away at a tanakh. So I don't want you storing your tanakh. So you have to get a special book cupboard for your food and a separate one for your tanakhs, for your chumashim, for your tefillin. And what am I going to do to make sure you do that? I'm going to go there on a hand that touches a tanakh. A second degree tumah that will be tummy your tumah. So don't do it. Okay? So, you get it now? What does Ediot have to do with this? That's exactly that. What does Ediot? Because Ediot has a list of all of the leniencies of Beis Shammai and the stringencies of Beis Hillel. Familiar with that, right? List all of that. So, the Mishnah says, Koheles, listen carefully, Mekule Beis Shammai, Umechumre Beis Hillel. What does that mean? Koheles, Beis Shammai was lenient. Beis Hillel was machmir. Because what happens if a person calls up his local Orthodox rabbi and says, "Oh, I can't believe what I did. I had a whole cupboard filled with truma, and I came home from a shir I was giving in Koheles, and I put the Koheles in the cupboard." So what's going to be the answer?
Problem,
because Koheles is not part of Tanakh. According to Beis Hillel, it is a problem because he thinks Koheles is part of Tanakh. You just messed up your whole cupboard of Truma. It's now Truma Tmeya, and now the only thing a Kohen can use it for is for fuel. Right? So that's why Maseches Edios is interested in this issue. Got it? Okay. Maseches Shabbos does something these other sources don't do, which is to tell us why someone would say Koheles is not part of the Bible. I shouldn't say that. Maseches Yodayin does say a few words. It says, Koheles eino ela mechochmas shimon. Just chochmah. There's nothing prophetic in the Bible. Right? It's just chochmah. It's wisdom. But Homer also has wisdom. It's wisdom that Medrash calls Hamirus. Nothing wrong with reading the wisdom of Hamirus. But it's just not canonical. It's not part of the Tanakh. Right? Okay. You want it to be part of Tanakh? Sorry, it has to be more than Chachma. Right? If what we'll do in the intro class is put all five of these together and see what the rabbis had with all of them, and we'll create criteria whereby a book has to be in Tanakh. It will obviously be prophetic, first of all. If you don't think it's prophetic and it's just Chachma, then forget it, you're out. Right? Now, there's another source in Vayikra Rabbah that says that Koheles can possibly lead people to heresy. Right? Heresy. The end of chapter 3. Who knows if a human being's spirit after death goes up to the heavens or it goes just down into the earth like an animal? Oh, that's the Gemara in Sanhedrin considers that a heretical thought, right? So, and Koheles entertains heretical thoughts. Why did they allow it to stay? Because he comes to non-heretical conclusions. What does Koheles teach us? That you're allowed to entertain any thought whatsoever, as long as you draw the right conclusion. Well, aren't you afraid that if you entertain the thought that you won't come to the right conclusion? Yeah, that's why we don't want it in the Bible. Okay? The Meiri tries to explain. He says, Koheles tries to resolve life's inconsistencies, get these two Hebrew words, Bitorat HaMechkor. The Hebrew there? Bitorat HaMechkor means through empirical data. Bitorat HaMechkor. And if you cannot tell me that we have empirical data of where the soul goes after we die, no one has come back to tell us. I know there are people who say that they were pronounced dead on the operating table and they saw a great light. Christians only see this, and the Jew sees this, and the Jew. Because the first thing they do when they think you're dead is they do this to your eye and pour, shine a light. The little brain waves you may have left interpret that.
And if they're able to revive you after that, you might remember it. Some people have, you know, they get into the national choir, and they, you know, they can be interviewed by, you know, these programs, and make a movie about it, right? And they do something. So Kohelis does not rely on, the Talmud relies on, which says, don't worry, after you die, there'll be a great equalizer. Everybody who suffered will get their rewards. They're getting all their punishment in this world, and they'll be left with joy and bliss in the next world. No, so, okay, using the next world or reincarnation or any other kind of assurance that they give us might work for a different book, but not for Kohelis. Okay? So that is the Miri's explanation. There's a third explanation that's given in Shabbos Daf Lamed Aleph for why Kohelis was originally rejected, was because Dvarav Sotrin Ze Et Ze. Dvarav Sotrin Ze Et Ze. His words contradict. We can give numerous examples, but I will tell you a nice place to look to collect them. You're familiar with the Mosav Rav Kook, right? Das Mikra, right? So, in Das Mikra on Kohelis is written by a great scholar. His name is Mordechai Zer Kavod. Mordechai, two words, Zer Kavod, Zayin Resh, like a crown of Kavod. And in his introduction to Kohelis, he writes all the apparent contradictions and their resolutions in Chazal. Is Simcha a good thing or is it a bad thing? Is Kaas a good thing or is it a bad thing? Right? So that is the reason why the Gemara thought that Kohelis does not belong. A book of the Bible should not be inconsistent. It must be prophetic. It certainly should not do harm. I don't want a book of the Bible that may lead people to heresy. Right? And in all these instances, the Talmud responded by saying, no, it's not a contradiction. You take out your brisket thumb and say, in this circumstance, Simcha is bad. In that circumstance, it's good. In this circumstance, Kaas is bad. In that circumstance, it's good. And you just, you know, you try to resolve it. You know, life is complicated. Life is contradictory. Right? Okay? You're just doing Chazal often compare Bilam and Avraham. Both of them have seen a great contradiction in God. God first tells Bilam, don't go with them. Then he tells him, go with them. And God gets angry with him for going. Bilam thinks that's great. Abraham, God tells him, your son is your future. You need to stop the Chazara. And the next day he says, kill your son. So Abraham says, listen, God, you're contradicting me. I don't get it. But I'm just an amoeba. I don't understand you, but I'll take him. Shem Shurval Hirsch explains, he's fully expected to come down with Yitzchak from the mountain when he told them, Rashi says he was lying to them. He didn't want, if he said, I'm going to go up the mountain to kill my son, they wouldn't have let him. But Shem Shurval Hirsch says, no, I'm coming down because God told me, Yitzchak Yikarei L'Chazara. And to my knowledge, he doesn't have any children himself. And if I kill him and burn him and turn him to ash, that won't come true. I don't believe that God wants me to do that. So Avram says, God, you're contradictory, but I'm working with it. I'll deal with it. Okay? All right, so that's Kohelis, about all the contradictions in life. And we're going to try to resolve it. Okay? What are the three problems? Again, it leads to heresy, contradictions, and there's no ostensible prophecy in the book at all. It just seems to be Chochma Shlom. Right? I would conclude this class by saying, What's the nafkamina? What's the takeaway between a book that is chokhmah and a book that's nevuah? If it's worthwhile, it's worthwhile, right? I will explain this in light of a comparison of a book of Tanakh that's not part of Chumash Megillos, but also written by Shlomo, that's very similar to a book of the Apocrypha. I'm talking about Mishlei Ben David, which is a book of the Tanakh, it's called Proverbs, and a book that resembles it in the Apocrypha, that I must say, to the untrained eye, if I were you can buy it in farm stores, it's called Ksuvim Achronim, I'm talking about Mishlei Ben Siri, are you familiar with it? Mishlei Ben Siri, it's Proverbs, it's longer than Mishlei Ben David, it's over 40 chapters, Mishlei Ben David is 31 chapters, And if to the untrained eye, if you're looking at a pasuk in Mishle ben David, and you're looking at a pasuk in Mishle ben Sira, you might not be able to differentiate between which one is the canonical work and which one is not. Right? And to be sure, Talmud quotes from Mishle ben Sira numerous times. There's a Tosfos in Daf Samech Hei, Maseches Erevin, that collects all of them, not all of them, but many of the times where the Gemara cites Mishle ben Sira, just to show his keys. Right? So, what's going on? So here's what I'd like to say. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, in the Tzadik Tes, explains why Mishle ben Sira is not canonical. And the explanations it gives to Mishle ben Sira, I must confess, could possibly apply to Mishle ben David. Because Mishle ben David is one of those five books. It too is contradictory. It too says things that don't appear to be easily understood. Okay? But once the rabbis were convinced, and felt at least the ones who got their way, because it is canonical, it is listed in the Gemara of Basra, that's the type that I have down there, right? You see the mem up here, Mishle, right? Okay, so they felt that it was prophetic. So you know what? It behooves us to respond to those apparent contradictions, as opposed to Mishle ben Sira when they pointed out the contradictions. I'm not going to try to resolve a contradiction in Mishle ben Sira. Man, I say. So I give this as an example. I'm old enough to remember teachers that punched us. They just smack the back of your ear or a piece of chocolate. I have pictures in my mind of a sixth grade teacher on top of a kid punching him on the ground. Right? I knew the kid, I knew his family, and the father said, he was happy with it. Because someone's got to knock some sense into this kid. Right? That's the way they wanted it. Today, that teacher would be arrested before the end of the day. You give your kid a swift patch on a city bus, there's a policeman waiting with handcuffs on the next stop. Right? There's a whole different approach to that kind of punishment in the world today. I'm not saying right or wrong, I'm just saying. Right? It was quite often, especially with European parents, but you got a hit, you know, every once in a while, you walk down, you ran out into the street in front of a car, you're gonna get a patch. Right? Okay? So, I must say I've raised Kananara's six kids. They have their own kids. I have never raised a hand. I don't remember lifting a hand. You can, you discipline them, but not with a hand. And I, you know, we just came back from some time in Israel with our daughter and her six kids, and our son with his kids. They discipline. Chayala, that's not, don't do that to your brother. But I've never seen them do the same. It's out of the question. You don't do that. And I'll admit that there are sometimes verbal abuse that can be worse than, you know, if a parent on the city bus is telling the kid, I can't believe you missed that shot. Your brother would have made that shot. You're worthless. You're nobody. That kid may be suffering more than getting a patch. So, all right. Anyway, I'm just saying that what do we do with a pasuk in Mishle that says it's the Hebrew is chasoch shevet chosech shevet sonei beno. If you spare the rod, at least you hear spare the rod and spoil the child. Did you hear that saying? In Mishle, it's spare the rod and hate the child. So Mishle is telling me I hate my kids because I never hit them with a rod. What's going on with that? That's a book of the Tanakh. It's everlasting. It's the Torah. It's prophecy. It's good. Right? So when the Talmud doesn't use that pasuk because at that time hitting kids was acceptable in the norm. But when it's no longer the norm, what do we do? Am I going to say we're abnormal because we're not living up to what Mishle expects of us with respect to our children? So if this was a pasuk in Mishle ben Sira, I would just say, close the book. Close it, finish it. It's wrong. It's off the mark. But because it's in Mishle ben David, which the Gemara concludes is canonical, the Bryce and Baba Basra lists it. So what we have to do is reinterpret the Shevet
that we're not supposed to remove from our kids. Shevet doesn't pshat mean a rod, or a yardstick, or a belt, or something like that. Right? But in also discipline, shevet apo. Shevet is not limited to an actual beating stick. If you need discipline. And that does stand the test of time. Because a kid that's never disciplined, you're going to be raising an adobe up or an option. And it says it's not adobe, never disciplined. And of course, they wouldn't even be. Okay, so that stands. That's what we're going to have to do in Koheles. If we run into psukim in Koheles that give us pause of that sort, we will go the extra mile, give it some interpretation. Right? The last introduction I give you on Koheles is that we will analyze the book from the standpoint of four different individuals. There's the Navi, who I will present as sort of the narrative. There is the Chacham, the wise one. There is the Amal. The Amal is the striver, the one who's working really hard at gaining meaning in life. And there is the the one who wants to experience the pleasures of life. And also beyond. Have you ever leaned to Koheles also? Okay, chances are you're familiar with it. So you see those four are going to appear throughout the book. What do they all have in common? The Navi, the Chacham, the Amal, and the fourth guy is the one who wants to just get, not going to be Epicurean, right? The healthcare, but he feels, we'll see. Talmudic statements, you'll be held to a cheshbon, says Yerushalmi Kiddushin, if you had a chance to enjoy God's gifts and you just chose not to because just to be stringent on yourself, like a treatment of the nazir according to one panel. So we're going to analyze the book from the standpoint of these four. Right? There is one that gets the last word, right? But we'll see what these four do. Okay, we'll close with that. And if you are so kind as to send it to them.